First, let me introduce Karima B. Karima B is a two-time Emmy-nominated producer, content creator, and writer for scripted and unscripted TV and film. She's also an actress and on-camera talent, having interviewed notable voices like Cheryl Lee Ralph, Lovey Ajayi Jones, and Jermaine Dupri. Through her production company, MC Grand, she writes and produces content geared towards elevating underrepresented voices, including her award-winning docuseries, The Self-Love Act, which I had the great pleasure of being story producer on. Thank you. This pilot is a recipient of the She Stories Grant from the Big We Foundation, and the crew had majority Black women in lead positions across every department. We are in the process of fundraising to produce more episodes, so please let us know and see one of us if you would like to support. Let's welcome Karima, everyone. And now I am so proud to introduce our special guest, Akwa Msangi. Yes, yes. Don't let me stop the party. Akwa is the writer and director of the award-winning and critically acclaimed feature film, Farewell Amour. Akwa has also directed for television, including for Disney's Growing Up docuseries, Starz' Sultry, Three Women, and Hulu's Saint X season finale. For Farewell Amour, Akwa was awarded the 2021 Indie Spirit Someone to Watch Award, as well as becoming a 2020 Sundance Momentum Fellow, a 2020 BAFTA Breakthrough, which I like to add, you know, that's across the pond. She fly here and there, okay? 2022 USA Artist Fellow, and 2022 to 2024 Reframe Rise Director Fellow. Akwa is currently in development on several feature projects, including a futuristic take on The Scarlet Letter, Where She Woke with 30 West, The Dictator Hunters with Archer Gray, and an adaptation of Rebecca Walker's romantic novel, A Day, with K Period Productions. Everyone, let's welcome Akwa.
There she is. That was amazing.
Thank you.
So, Akwa, it's an honor for me to be here. This year makes my 15th year of being in the entertainment industry. So to come back and have the West Coast premiere here, I'm so grateful to be in your company.
As I am with you. Thank you.
Yeah. So I wanted to just have like a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there are similar themes that are seen in both of our pieces, even though they're very different. But there's some through line here with relationship.
Yep.
And I think what was so interesting, it almost seemed like in self-love, I'm kind of running to and greeting love and wanting this love. And of course, with a title like Farewell Amour, you have your characters doing something very different. Can you go deeper into that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I loved your film. It's really beautiful, really beautifully shot, really tender. Yeah. And so poignant. It's such a great reminder, especially now, because I mean, we always need to be aware of self-love, but especially now. yeah, I mean, Farewell Amour. Okay, if I'm being really honest.
Please.
So Farewell Amour had a prequel called Farewell Meu Amour. Meu is mine in Portuguese. And then this was the sequel to that, sort of the longer extended version, or continuation, I should say. And I hadn't really thought of another title for the feature, so I was just calling it the Farewell Amour, the feature one. But I do think that there is something about, you know, at the end they sort of like find themselves and they find love, maybe find self-love. But it's saying goodbye to what they thought was love, or, you know, the kind of love that they had previously, which was a long distance, you know, sort of by formality arrangement, and actually having to fall in love for real, in person. And I think those are themes that you have in your film as well, in terms of people having to confront and consider how to fall in love for real with, like, who they are, where they are in that moment.
Correct. And I would say too, even falling out of love of what they thought it their life should look like.
Exactly.
For me, it was about releasing perfectionism, releasing the people pleasing, you know what I mean? And really taking time to think about like what actually makes me happy right now in this season of my life, and how can I embrace more of that without any guilt, you know, of disappointing anyone in my life or anything like that. So,
yeah.
With that being said, I wanted to talk now about the relationship with identity. Obviously, you know, in the self-love, like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm really African. And you have your characters in your film who are kind of trying to balance their identity and coming to America and assimilating or not, and trying to retain tradition while also trying to embrace what's new. So can you talk more about that, what that process was like as far as character development?
Yeah, I mean, I live in New York, and I live...
Shout out to New York.
Yes, New York has been home for about 25 years now. And I live amongst immigrants, and there's always that fine line of being a New Yorker versus being from, you know, insert here, wherever people are from. And New York is one of those special places where you can go into particular neighborhoods and have a whole other experience, possibly in a whole other language, and still very much be, you know, a subway ride away from Times Square or whatever. And that's an important characteristic of New York, which I think we don't often see, you know, especially if you think about New York stories. There's been, obviously, like the Woody Allen stories, which is a different part of New York altogether. And then we've had the Spike Lee stories, which is Black New York, but a particular kind of Black New York, Bed-Stuy, et cetera. And then there's the Africans, and you know, they're kind of scattered around, they're different places, and people come from different parts of Africa in different places, the Bronx versus Staten Island or whatever. But there's a way in which there is community that is developed there. But when you go to your wide world life, your taxi driving life, or your working in the hospital life, or whatever, there is a way that you kind of have to assimilate at the very least so that people understand you in terms of your accent, let's say. And then, so what that's like for Walter, what that's like for Esther versus what that's like for their daughter are three very different experiences, the demand for assimilation and what that looks like.
May I ask how maybe your own personal experience with that inspired what these characters go through in the film?
Yeah, I mean, from my own personal experience, I was born in the States. I left when I was 5. I came back when I was 17. So mine is a lot like Sylvia's experience, except I came from an English-speaking country, as opposed to, let's say, a French or, in this case, Portuguese-speaking country. So I didn't have the pressure to learn a whole new language in order to be here. As somebody else might have. But, you know, it was a completely different culture, and that was something I reflected a lot upon when I was writing the character for Sylvia, you know, having a boyfriend or not, or what that even meant. You know, my understanding of having a boyfriend versus an American understanding of having a boyfriend, or, like, going out to social events, or... It's almost like there's a way that you have to prove yourself. And I think that's something that Sylvia, as a dutiful daughter, dutiful African daughter, you know, she can't have a fit and slam the door. There is no door to slam. But she can't have a fit.
I mean,
like...
fun fact, I actually grew up without doors in my room. I couldn't slam a door either, y'all.
Right. And so, you know, she can't tell her parents to F off. That's not an option that she has available to her. So what, you know, how is she able to speak? She's able to speak through dance and music. And that's something that I experienced as well.
Before we go to that part, because I do want to have a section about music, I want to talk about the relationship to the actual work. Being a director is not easy, being a Black director, being a Black female director. You have accomplished something so beautiful with this film. Can you talk about what your process was like creating it?
Yes. It was a long process. You know, this is a film that was based upon a relationship of an uncle and aunt of mine who had been separated for many years for visa immigration issues. And it was just like an ongoing thing in the family of like, is it gonna happen? Are they gonna be together? Is auntie gonna be able to come, et cetera, et cetera. And so this was sort of the what if story. What if auntie finally got her visa and was able to come, and how would that play out? I remember there was a time when it was looking like she might be able to make it. And I was like, man, is he even gonna recognize them when they show up at the airport? And I had this whole sort of thought process of him being at the arrivals gate and waiting for them, and would he recognize them? And then when they came out, like, what would they talk about? And would it be really awkward? And he'd show them around, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's sort of where it started, as a picture in my mind. And just, you know, going to airports. And I find airports to be like such magical places, you know, where if you have the opportunity to sit in an airport and just watch people, you know, you have your business people who sort of have their cabs and are on their way, and then you have the families. There was a point where I was living and working in Cuba, and that's a place that's really hard to travel to, even for Cuban people. And so the airport is like, you know, busloads of people come to greet the one relative who was able to come back, and the tears and the, you know, there's like a whole story with just the airport, let alone what happens after the airport once you leave. So that's kind of where I started, was talking to my producing partner, Huria Mohammed.
Shout out to Huria.
We've worked together for many years, and she's a dear friend and colleague. And she was just like, you know, I was telling her this story, and she was like, you should really write that. And so I did, and I couldn't quite figure out whose perspective I wanted to write from. So I was like, I'll just write from all of them perspectives. How hard could it be? I had many deadlines to sort of keep me honest, but that was the experience.
I want to go back now to the music, right, and the other aspects of the culture that are interweaved in the fabric of your film. Can you talk about why it was important, in particular, like even this particular culture?
Sorry, can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Because you never answered the question about your experience working as a director.
I didn't.
Before we get to music, I mean, you had COVID. You know, you're being very vulnerable on camera, too, and revealing a lot about yourself, which I've never quite gone that far. So blessings on you for doing that. Like, what was your experience?
It was hard, even still hard to watch sometimes, and not because I'm not proud of the work, but because my career has been behind the camera, and if I'm on camera, I'm, you know, very much not revealing as much as I did. But I think with the Self-Love Act, you know, it's a docuseries, this is a pilot, no one knows who I am, really, and so I wanted, like I said, to start at the root. Before anything else, I felt like I was Black, you know, that I was African, so.
You actually are Black.
Yeah.
You don't just have to feel like you're Black.
Right, right. Thank you. So for me, it was just like, okay, at first, it really was gonna be just a sit-down conversation with Dr. Gina, right? Like, very simple setup, very short digital series.
It always starts that way, doesn't it?
And it's never like that when you're trying to create something. Yeah. And so, you know, when I got sick on my birthday, on the day that I'm shooting, I was just like, you know what, something's telling me to record this. Mm-hmm. Because I have no idea now how this is gonna come together. Because what I outline is now going out the window. Dr. Gina's on her way from DC, okay?
Oh, man.
The crew's already on their way. It's 6 a.m.
Gosh.
So for me, it was like, just move, push forward. You know, the story will take shape and the ancestors will guide me. But for the Self-Help Act, like I was saying, like I wanted people to really get to know me because love is a vulnerable topic. Mm-hmm. So if I'm sitting here interviewing perfect strangers, like, you know, but if there's something for them to connect to and other people to connect to while they're watching it, then for me, it's all worth it. Now, I will say for the other episodes, you know, it's self-love and another theme, like self-love and spirituality, self-love and mental health and things like that. So, of course, I'll share a little something, but you're not going to see the whole family on there the whole time. So, yeah, for me, it was about if love is vulnerable, then I got to do that. I got to be that way, too. I wanted to come back to, like, you know, music and culture and how it's interweaved in the fabric of the film. Why particularly this culture, you know, and why the music? You hinted at it before with your own personal experience, but if you can dive deeper, I would love to hear that.
I live in New York, and and I love dance. That's always been a big part of my life. And I was dancing in a lot of Kizomba communities in New York. Kizomba is a very beautiful couples dance from Angola. And so, you know, with that comes the culture, you know, not just the music, but and the sort of dance style itself, but learning a bit of the culture. And Angola has a lot of... And then because I spent time in Cuba as well, like Angola and Cuba have a very close history because there's a bunch of Cubans who went to Angola to help them win their civil war. And the Cold War, as we know it in this country, you know, was sort of like a, I don't know, theoretical war, but it physically took place in Angola between Americans and Russians on Angolan soil for like 30-something years. And this couple is sort of the fallout from that, which, you know, a lot of people don't really know about that, that but there were bombs being dropped on a different continent altogether because of you two people fighting over here. So anyhow, I, you know, had this story about this uncle and auntie and was doing this dance. And one of the things that's unique about Kizomba as a couple's dance, unlike a salsa or bachata or any other kind of couples dance, is that it doesn't have a regular foot pattern to the dance. It just depends on the person leading the dance is reacting to the music, and the person who's following the leader has to be connected in such a way to know what the leader wants to do. So you there's a physical connection that your bodies are touching each other, but you know, it's a little bit spiritual in the sense that you're going with where they're going, and you don't know what they're going to do next, if they're going to speed up or slow down or whatever it is. And I just thought that was such an interesting metaphor for this couple that used to be dance partners, they used to be literally in step and have now fallen out of step due to separation and all of that business. But he has found another dance partner that he is in step with, and that's who he's thinking of, and that's who he craves. And it's not because the first dance partner is not a good dance partner, but he's just fallen out of step with that person and is trying to find his way back, right? And then with the daughter, that style of dance is called kuduro, also from Angola, very in the spirit of hip-hop. But has a lot of social commentary in the music. There's a lot of, you know, people, young people talking about the economy and domestic violence at home and, you know, all manner of things. And so wanting to, for this young, dutiful daughter who's not able to necessarily speak her mind to her parents, the way that she is able to express herself is through the music. And I just thought it would be a useful style for to be able to comment on both of those groups. Do you want to talk about your music?
I mean, I put my brother's music in mine. No, but for me, you know, because there was some mixed media and the different formats of I was experimenting and playing with the genre You know, for me, music was a way to continue to push the story forward.
Yes.
And hopefully keep the audience engaged enough for the next scene.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ekwa.
Thank you.